Hello and welcome to Talking Tudors, a fortnightly podcast about the ever-fascinating Tudor dynasty. My name is Natalie Gruniger and I'll be your host and guide on this journey through 16th century England. Are you ready to step through the veil of time into the dazzling and dangerous world of the Tudor court? Without further ado, it's time to talk Tudors. Hello everyone, welcome back to Talking Tudors episode 11. I'm your host, Natalie Gruniger, and joining me today to talk all things Mary Tudor is Sarah Bryson. Sarah is a researcher, writer and educator who has a Bachelor of Early Childhood Education with honours. She currently works with children with disabilities. She's passionate about Tudor history and has a deep interest in Mary Tudor, Charles Brandon, Duke of Suffolk and the reign of Henry VIII. She runs a website dedicated to Tudor history for many years and has written for various websites, including my website On the Tudor Trail and Queen Anne Boleyn. She has been studying primary sources to tell the story of Mary Tudor for a decade. She's currently writing a book on the life of Charles Brandon, Duke of Suffolk, and his family. She lives in Australia. My conversation with Sarah straight after this short musical break, courtesy of guitarist John Sales. Talking Tudors, Sarah. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And yourself?
I'm very well, thank you. It's always lovely to have a fellow Aussie and Tudor history lover on the show.
That's wonderful to be here.
Now, could we begin by you telling us just a little bit about yourself and your background, please?
Okay, well, I'm actually a trained educator. I have a Bachelor of Early Childhood Education with honours. Right. So history is sort of my side love, shall I say.
Yes.
I work full-time with disabled children and I also run a speech and language program. at the school I work at. So it's all very busy, my life.
I can imagine, yes. All right. And so what actually sparked your interest in Tudor history?
Goodness. I would say probably about 15, 20 years ago, mm-hmm. I just heard of this this lady called Anne Boleyn,
yes.
as some of us have heard of, and I was just fascinated straight from the beginning. Mm. You know, it's such a I just started to read as much as I could, and the Tudor period is such a compelling period that there's always something to read about. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I would say quite a while ago I started my my fascination and love for Tudor history.
Yes, and now you've recently written a new book. And I'd love it if you could tell us about La Reine Blanche, so Mary Tudor, A Life in Letters. Tell us about your book.
Well, despite common belief, it's not actually about Mary the First. It's about Mary Tudor, Henry the Eighth's sister.
Yes.
So as I was reading, I came across Mary Tudor, and I was just fascinated by her.
Mm.
She was just this very compelling woman who history seems to have quite overlooked.
Right.
So I was really curious as to, you know, who this sister of Henry was. I mean, we know quite a lot about Margaret and her time in Scotland and all her adventures.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to find out more about Mary. And so I guess my research started, and then I found out about her marriage to King Louis the 12th of France.
Yes.
She was 18 and he was 52.
Mm.
So that was quite a, I suppose for us in modern times, that's quite an age gap.
Yes, absolutely.
But she was becoming queen. So, and then a few months later he died, and she created a great scandal by marrying Charles Brandon, Duke of Suffolk.
Yes, absolutely.
Who was 30 and she was 18.
Mm.
And essentially he committed treason by marrying the king's sister.
That's right.
And I was, we're so lucky that so many of her letters of the period survive.
Right.
So I just began to read her letters fastidiously, just pouring through these letters to see how she waggled her way out of this quite tricky situation and essentially made it look like it was all Henry's idea and soothed the whole situation over without nothing more than a little slap on the wrist that didn't eventually happen.
Right.
So
it's amazing, yeah, isn't
so it? It is. It's such a it should be a soap opera, I think.
Absolutely.
I think it's such a story.
Now, I wanted to ask you, as you just mentioned, so Mary's first husband was King Louis XII of France, but then she marries Charles Brandon. And what I wanted to know is, were the two associated before her marriage to the French king? So Charles and Mary, did they have, was something going on before she went over to France?
There was something of, how much of something,
yeah,
we don't know. I think it was just a common attraction between the two. We know that shortly after Louis died, Charles Brandon sent a letter saying that the English council, knew of his affection for Mary, but would never permit her to marry him.
Right.
So we have that Brandon stating that they knew that there was an affection already there. But more importantly, we have two friars who came over to Mary, and even, this was very, very shortly after Louis died, came to Mary and said, "You can't marry Brandon. The council will never allow it.
Mm.
He's an evil man. You can't marry him."
Right.
So again, we have proof that these people knew that she was attracted to Brandon and Brandon was attracted to her. As I said, how deep that relationship went, we don't know. And we don't know if there was any sort of suggestion between them, should anything happen. But there was definitely attraction between them that obviously they took up after after Louis died.
Mm. Okay, and knowing Henry the way we know Henry, how do you think Charles managed to get away with this? You've touched on this a little bit, but yeah, it just seems quite amazing that, you know, Henry had no real issue getting rid of other childhood friends.
Yes.
How do you think, what was it? Was it Mary? Was it her?
It was,
you know,
it
she
was
managed
definitely,
to, yeah.
Yes. Yes, wow. It was definitely Mary that was doing the manoeuvring there.
Mm.
She this is where her letters are just fantastic to read. She basically maneuvered Francis I, who was the new French king, into a position where he wrote to Henry and said that he would approve of the marriage and that he thought it was a fantastic idea. And in return, Mary had to feed him information from England.
Right, okay.
Now, this sounds quite scandalous, really. But the thing is, Mary was in a position that she could tell Francis anything. She didn't have to tell him information. Absolutely. She could feed him whatever lies she wanted to. And all he had to do was write a letter. And we also have these letters that remind Henry that when Mary left for France at Dover, Henry actually made her a promise that should Louis die before her, she was free to choose a man of her own choosing.
Right, okay.
Now, if Henry said this to hush her up and get her over to France, or if he actually meant this, we don't know. But Mary was very, very quick to remind Henry that he had made this promise and wasn't going to let him forget it.
Yeah.
Also, more importantly, Mary sort of held Henry over a barrel. She was deeply beloved by the English people, young, beautiful, greatly beloved. What would the English people think of their king if they didn't let, you know, their English princess return home, or if Henry, forbid her to return home or punished her in any major way? So she really held him over a barrel to the point where he had to let her return. And Charles return. Mm. Otherwise, he would be the one that looked quite bad after all of this. Her letters show that she exchanged all her plate and her dowry in return to be able so that she could come back to England. And she made it so that it looked like it was Henry's idea rather than hers. And she also smuggled the famous Mirror of Naples, which is a huge diamond and pearl, back to England to give to Henry to soothe his wounded pride.
Wow. Very clever girl.
Lots of buttering up there. So once she returned, her and Charles returned, there was, Henry welcomed his sister back with warm, open, loving arms. And she said, "It was all my fault. I fell in tears to Charles and I made him marry me and such. Played the weak woman part. And so Henry welcomed her back. And then he said, "Well, I'm going to fine you. I'll fine you £24,000, which was an astronomical amount in those days.
Yes.
And he said you had to pay £1,000 a year.
Right.
But records show that, about 10 years later, they'd only paid about £1,500 back.
Right, okay.
So although there was this huge fine that they had to repay, that they didn't. It was all just for show to make Henry's wounded pride look a lot better. But, Mary sort of really took the reins in that situation. She's the one that proposed to Brandon. She's the one that took the blame for the marriage, and she's the one, in a male-dominated era, really wrangled the men in her life to be able to get what she wanted and sort of happily ever after.
Amazing. Another, fascinating episode in Tudor history, definitely. Now, you mentioned you were talking about Mary and you said that you found her compelling. I just wanted to know if you could tell us a little bit more about the woman that you've discovered in your research. What was she like and what did her contemporaries think of her? You've touched on the fact that she was very beloved by her people.
Yes.
Is there anything else that kind of struck you?
I think she was quite a traditional religious Catholic woman, especially in a time of upheaval with the Reformation and just the new ideas that were being brought into England. She was still quite a traditional Catholic. In the latter years of her life, she was in poor health and retired to Westhorpe in Suffolk. She would often attend fairs, especially a big fair held every year at Bury St. Edmunds. And people would flock to come and see her. She was a great benefactor, so she, she gave money to the poor. She wrote, luckily it still survived, a lot of letters, which, to try and help the people in her service. And one of her servants had gotten into some debt So she wrote letters to try to help him out of this debt. She, for the rest of her life, she was quite good friends with a lady named Jane Popincourt, who had been placed with her when she was younger to learn French. And she was friends with her throughout her life and exchanged gifts with Jane. She was just really a well-liked woman, sort of very, when you sort of think of a traditional Tudor woman at court, Mary may come to mind, you know, very giving, very kind, very loving.
Right, fantastic.
Very much liked.
And do we know much about Mary's early life and her upbringing?
There's not a lot written. It was a traditional upbringing, much as her older sister. She was the youngest surviving child of Henry VII and his wife, Elizabeth of York. So she was educated quite well in terms of the skills needed to be a princess and a bride.
Yes.
Obviously, many people think that a princess is a great disappointment, but they weren't. They were fantastic for marriages overseas,
absolutely.
As we saw with Louis. She was educated in the French language, to read and to write. She could play musical instruments. She was a very good dancer, very good singer. Etiquette, all that sort of thing. She could, luckily for us, she could read and write very well.
Fantastic.
So, she received quite a good education, as was standard for the time for a woman of her position.
Absolutely. And I know that Henry, prior to becoming the heir, spent time with his sisters and was brought up with them. Do you think this is where they may have formed, you know, a close bond?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Mary and Henry were very close, especially in their younger years. When he came to the throne, he lavished his sister, he lavished Mary with gifts. They would often participate in joust celebrations together as teenagers. They were very close. His favourite dancing partner was his sister. There's a letter that we have that says how he wished Mary to return back to court because he missed her. So, yeah, they were very, very close as they got as younger. But unfortunately for Mary, Anne Boleyn came into the picture.
Yes.
And that caused a great scandal for Mary.
Yeah, it did. And I wanted to ask you about Anne, because when Mary Tudor died in June 1533, so just kind of weeks after Anne Boleyn's coronation. So I wanted to know, what was their relationship like, Mary and Anne's? What do we know of that?
Well, in short, they hated one another, passionately hated one another. Mary was a dear, dear friend to Catherine of Aragon. They had known each other since Catherine had first come to England and Mary was a little girl. Essentially grown up together in England. They'd lost children together. They'd gone to celebrations together. They'd been at court together. They'd stayed at each other's homes, exchanged gifts. They were, you know, essentially very, very close friends. So when and keeping in mind that Mary was a traditional Catholic at the time. So when Anne Boleyn came in, Mary greatly disapproved of getting rid of Catherine of Aragon. She did not think that that was, you know, something that could be done. Anne Boleyn was the other woman. She was someone that was trying to take Catherine's throne from her. So she disapproved. And we actually have quite a few records of their rather spats at each other, shall we say, politely. We have one instance in 1532 where Mary said some rather derogatory words about Anne. Unfortunately, we don't have the words, but perhaps that might be a good thing. And it actually caused a fight between the Duke of Norfolk's men, who was Anne Boleyn's uncle, and Charles Brandon's men. And a fight happened over these words, and one of Charles Brandon's servants was killed. Now, Brandon was furious and he, you know, grabbed his sword and he stormed down there ready to attack Norfolk's servants and get his revenge. And the king actually had to hurriedly send Thomas Cromwell in to stop the whole matter. And it was recorded that it all started over these derogatory words that Mary Tudor had said. We also have another case where Anne couldn't quite publicly attack Mary, you know, as she didn't want to offend Henry. But she attacked Charles Brandon, saying that he was sleeping with his older one of his daughters, Frances. And that caused quite a scandal as well, as Anne was trying to attack, as Mary was trying to attack. So there was a lot of sort of flinging of insults at one another. Famously, Mary wasn't at Anne's coronation.
Yes, that's right.
But she was quite ill at the time.
Yes, yeah.
But, so when Anne came on the scene, she removed herself in protest from court. Mm-hmm. She didn't want to be around the court where Anne Boleyn was. So they had a great dislike of one another.
Goodness.
Yes, it was, as I said, it's a little bit of a soap opera.
It is. Yes. Well, yeah, that's the whole Tudor dynasty, isn't it? Like a great soap opera. Now, as you know, Sarah, I love to explore the story of the Tudors through the lens of the great houses and the palaces and the castles where this absolutely intriguing story played out. So I wanted to know, what's one of your favourite Tudor locations associated with Mary or with Charles Brandon? A place that you love to go?
I actually have two. Am I able to say two?
Of course, yeah.
The first is Tattershall Castle, which is in Lincolnshire.
Yes.
It was gifted to Brandon in 1537 after the Rebellion of Grace sort of broke out and, really challenged the king's authority. Mm-hmm. Brandon was granted Tattershall as his main place to keep an eye on the area.
Right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, only the major brick tower exists today, but that's the place that Brandon would have slept in, taken his meals in, etc. It's fascinating. It's just this incredible deep red brick.
Yeah.
I think it's five stories high.
Wow.
Just an incredible. And when you get to the top, it gives this incredible, just breathtaking view of Lincolnshire. You can see all the way to the Lincoln Cathedral on a good day.
Oh, how stunning.
So, yeah, it's just an amazing place. Definitely one of my most favourite places and a must visit.
Excellent.
And the second one I would mention that is not often known about is a place called Grimsthorpe Castle.
Ah, yes. Yep, yep.
Now, I love Grimsthorpe. It belonged to Brandon's fourth wife, Catherine Willoughby.
Okay.
It was her family's. Obviously, when Brandon married Catherine, he took it over.
Mm-hmm.
And Henry VIII visited there in, I think it was 1541?
Right, yes.
42 with Catherine Howard.
Oh, yes, yep, yep.
And that's where Catherine Howard, that tour was when Catherine Howard got up to a little bit of no good, perhaps.
That's right, yeah.
But we have a famous letter from Catherine Willoughby that no good had happened at Grimsthorpe. She wouldn't let that happen. Now, the front of Grimsthorpe has been redone in a more Georgian style, but the back is still very traditional as Brandon had rebuilt it. And so as you sort of walk through these rooms, they slowly get narrower and narrower, and they're just these sort of – just this incredible vibe of – gives you a bit of an idea of what would have this manor would have been like during the late 15th century. So that's another place that I would definitely suggest that perhaps is not – so well known.
Yeah, definitely. And I love that you mentioned it had a vibe. That's what I look for in all the...
I love a good vibe.
The vibe, excellent. Now, you've just recently come back from a month-long trip to the UK, is that right?
I have.
Excellent. So what was one of the highlights for you on this trip?
Oh, one of the highlights. I think for me, I'm researching my next book. I went to Westhorpe.
Yes.
It doesn't, the manor tragically doesn't exist anymore. It was pulled down. But there are, the original footings are still there.
Okay.
There's actually a residential home built on the place now.
Right.
But as I said, the original footings are still there. The original bridge over the moat is still there. And there's just a wealth of artifacts that have been pulled from the moat. So to be able to rummage through those was just quite incredible.
Wow, fantastic.
To be able to get so hands-on with a building that's sort of almost 500 years old was it was an incredible experience, and that place definitely has a vibe about it.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned you're working on a new book. Can you tell us at all about that, or is it still...
Yes, I can.
Oh,
so I'm actually looking at the family of Charles Brandon, Duke of Suffolk.
Okay.
So I've been sort of researching on and off his life and his family for about 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at predominantly the male line, as there's more written about the males, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at Brandon's grandfather, his father, his uncles, his sons, and just I think there's this incredible thing that the Brandons throughout history were actually very close to English kings.
Right.
From Henry the VI right through to Edward the VI. They're this family that sort of seem to hover around the kings.
Right.
And so little is written about them. And for me, that's shocking. So I thought, nope, I've got to get all of this into a book, because they were some of the things they did were quite impactful in English history. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So definitely a family that's been overlooked.
And am I right in thinking that it was, I may have this wrong, that it was Charles Brandon's father that was cut down at the Battle of Bosworth?
Yes,
was
it was.
Yeah, I thought, yeah. Yes. So, yeah, very close to the kings. Yeah,
absolutely.
Definitely.
But you'd be surprised. It was actually his grandfather and his uncle was master of the horse to Henry the VII.
Wow.
So many people know about his father, but his grandfather and uncle actually played even more roles. So
right.
I have to read about that in my book.
Yes, I can't wait. So when is that one due out, Sarah?
That's not due out until 2020.
Okay, so okay.
It's a little bit more research to do yet.
Oh, yeah, look, I understand exactly. And I know that you've had a sort of deep interest in Charles Brandon for some time now. What is it about him that kind of, that you connected to, or what resonated with you?
He's just a man that I would say is a survivor. You mentioned earlier, like, how did Brandon survive when so many people of Henry's reign were rather lost their heads, shall we say. Brandon was a man who grew up with Henry, and he knew his king. He knew his king so well.
Yeah,
he knew to jump before Henry knew, to tell him to jump.
Yeah.
So he was, you know, one of England's great survivors. And I'm just fascinated with this man that survived such a tumultuous period in English history. And again, that is just so often overlooked. He played such important roles in Henry VIII's reign. And so little is written about his life. So very fascinated.
Yeah, he is. Absolutely. He's intriguing. And I often wonder if it's the fact, and I don't, you know, I haven't researched him deeply enough. You can maybe tell me a bit more. But is it the fact that his agenda always seemed to coincide perfectly with Henry's? It, like, do you know what I mean? He never seemed...
Surprising. Yeah, that,
surprising.
Isn't it?
Intelligent man, I suppose. But
He absolutely was. He could read the winds and adapted very, very well. And I think that's one of his greatest skills. Yes. That we do have record of his little protests here and there.
Right.
He was against the annulment of Henry's marriage to Catherine of Aragon. And there's one stage where he said that he would rather some ill misfortune come to him than he had to go tell her that she was now a princess and not a queen. But he still did his duty, as Brandon often did.
Yeah.
So his public persona was often quite different to his personal persona.
Right. So I suppose that, you know, he didn't humiliate Henry on a large public scale. No.
Never.
Yeah. Clever. All right, Sarah, this has been great. I'm having such a good time. Now, we've come to the time of playing 10 to go. So are you ready for 10 quick questions? All right.
Yes.
Fabulous. First one, name two items that are on your bucket list.
Two items that are on my bucket list. First, I want to get my Brandon book finished.
Yes, that's an important one.
Another one would be I'd like to travel more of Australia. I've travelled overseas into all different countries, but I would like to travel more of Australia, see more of my home.
Yeah, that sounds good. What's something that you do to recharge?
Oh, I like to sleep. I will happily admit that there are some Sunday afternoons where I've had a little nanny nap.
Yeah, good. Yeah, we all love a good sleep. What's something that brings you joy?
I love reading. I love reading.
Me too. Name a favourite childhood book.
Tomorrow When the War Began series by James Marsden. It's my favourite. He's an Australian author.
Yes.
And he wrote a series of books for Australian teenagers. And he's my favourite Australian author. I actually named my daughter after the lead character in these books. So I highly recommend them.
Lovely. Thank you. And what's a favourite holiday destination for you?
England. I just got back from there. I've been there 3 times. So I'm happy to go again.
I know. I always tend to return to England.
Can't help
as well.
The pool.
I know. Although this week coming up, I'm off to the States for a month, Sarah. So that's
exciting.
But mind you, I have sneaked in a few Tudor-related things, even
of
on a
course.
Trip to the.
Yeah. It's a must.
It's a must. So I managed to somehow sneak things in all the time. Describe your ideal Saturday night.
Ooh, glass of wine and a good book.
Sounds
a bit
good.
Boring, but that's what I like
no,
to do.
No, that sounds good. What does your writing space look like? Do you have a dedicated space or do you like to move around? What do you do?
I have a desk and it is, I like to call it organized chaos.
Yeah.
There's just books everywhere, open, it's just a mound of books with a keyboard and a screen.
Yeah. Excellent. Is there something that most people don't know about you?
Something that most people don't know about me.
Any hidden phobias or anything like that?
Hidden phobias? No, not particularly. I'm quite an open person. Perhaps that I'm just an absolute crazy cat lady. I have four cats.
There you go. There you go.
And crazy I just lady. Love cats. So, yes, that's a little tidbit about me.
All right. Fabulous. What was your first paid job?
My first paid job was at a fast food place called Hungry Jack's, or otherwise known as Burger King.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah, I was a Macca's girl, so yeah.
Yeah, it's a foot in the door.
Exactly. Now, last question. What is the first word that comes to mind when I say Charles Brandon?
First word that comes to mind. Dedicated.
Dedicated, I like it.
Yes. Dedicated to his king.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And live to tell the tale. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Fabulous. So now we're up to, I think, you know, at the end of the episodes, I like to ask all my guests for a Tudor takeaway. So something that our listeners can go and explore. Do you have a Tudor takeaway for us?
I do. I have this just wonderful website that I love to visit.
Yes.
It's called Everyday Life and Fatal Hazards in 16th Century England.
Wow.
And it's run by Professor Stephen Gunn and his associates.
Yes.
And it's a project that looks at accidental deaths in the 16th century.
Mm.
So they've been scouring coroner's reports and they're compiling different accidental deaths to look at different trends, you know, just to see all these different things that were happening. And each month they have a little discovery of the month. And it's a little morbid, but there's just some fascinating tales. A man fell backwards into a boiling cauldron.
Oh,
and,
that doesn't sound good.
Another man was looking up at a beautiful vaulted ceiling and a piece of the ceiling fell on his head. It is a little morbid, but it's just a fascinating website. So I would strongly suggest people having checking it out.
Wonderful. I have heard of the research and the book, but I didn't realize there was a website with those interesting monthly.
Yes.
So I'm going to be on there, and I think lots of other people will. Well, that's all we have time for now, and I've had a really lovely conversation, and thank you so much for giving up your evening to chat with me, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Talking Tudors. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any comments or suggestions or just want to say hi, please get in touch with me via my website, www.onthetudortrail.com, where you'll also find show notes for today's episode. If you've enjoyed the show, please share the podcast with friends and family and click on the all-important follow button so you'll never miss an episode. I also invite you to join our Talking Tudors podcast group on Facebook, where you can interact with other Tudor history lovers and hear all the behind-the-scenes news. It's time now for us to re-enter the modern world. As always, I look forward to talking Tudors with you again very soon.